I'm just absolutely floored by what women can achieve under impossible circumstances, juggling multiple plates. And I think there's so many women in organizations at the moment that are just squashed and squeezed, you know, and they need to have some space to really thrive.
Welcome to Series 3 of Greater Than 11%, a podcast whose aim is to educate, inspire, and demystify creative careers, all the meanwhile promoting some awesome women and non-binary folk. For episode 93, we are joined by the co-founders of Good Shout, Amy Keane and Nicola Kemp. Amy, a creative sociologist, advertising strategist, poet, and author, and Nicola, a journalist, editor, and event host, recently brought their incredible talents together to create training products that facilitate social learning practices to help people experiment with their own voice, talent, and thinking. And they named that company Good Shout. Now, to give you a detailed summary of both their accolades, advocacy, and badass careers would take a whole podcast episode in its own right. So I'm going to do my best to give you a whirlwind tour and jump through their working lives with the caveat there is so much more. Amy Keane, in addition to what I've already mentioned, is also a public speaker, diversity activist, and creative director and lead facilitator at Good Shout. She has more than 17 years' experience working within the advertising industry, and she isn't just an author, she's a best-selling one. And you may have come across her first book, The Girl Who Gave Zero Fucks, because it is a number one bestseller. If you haven't heard of it, now's the time to press pause on this podcast and order it immediately. She also more recently published her second book, House of Weeds, which you should also order. She was named one of LinkedIn's top global voices in media and marketing and listed as one of Campaign's top 10 trailblazers for her diversity work as co-founder of DICE, which stands for Diversity and Inclusion at Conferences and Events. And Nicola Kemp is head of community for Good Shout, in addition to her role as editorial director for Creative Brief, where she oversees consumer trends, innovation, and interviews with industry thought leaders. She started her career as a financial journalist before specializing in technology, social trends, and marketing. Nikki has written for the likes of Campaign, Reuters, Bloomberg, The Guardian, and The Observer. She is a recipient of the Women in Marketing Journalist of the Year Award for her work championing diversity in the creative industries, was featured in TimeWise Power 50, and is a Bloom Everyday Action Award winner, plus a Campaign Trailblazer of the Future. Again, there's so much more to these two incredible women, and no doubt we can uncover more of their everyday and legendary moments in the interview. Amy and Nikki, I'm so excited and happy to welcome you both to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you. Thank you for the lovely introductions.
Very nice.
Well, they're all yours. It's all your amazing things that you've achieved. And like I said, I had to condense it. One, there's two of you, and you've both like done so much awesome, excellent, amazing things in your careers to date. So yeah, I'm so excited to have you both here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm buzzing.
So I'm wondering if I can ask both of you, I've given a brief overview of what Good Shout is, but it'd be great to hear in your words how it came about and its aims and purposes and who else is involved.
I think the most important thing that I absolutely have to know at the beginning is that I believe Good Shout is the only training company in the world that has its own jingle, because the world hasn't heard the jingle yet. I've been working on this jingle behind the scenes. Nikki and I have been working together for years, like formally for at least 3 years. And the reason why Good Shout came about is because of our first thing that we launched together. So we launched, you mentioned it in the intro, DICE, which stands for Diversity and Inclusion at Conferences and Events. It's a process of certification and best practice charter for events organizers to curate more diverse and inclusive events, because events and conferences across every industry are far too white male dominated. So we launched that 3 years years ago to try and get better representation on stages. But one of the things that we encountered when we were talking to events organisers that are well known for manuals or male panels is that we'd always get the same pushback when it came to women not being on lineups. We asked all the women, they said no. We realized that actually it's not just enough to talk about diversity and try and, you know, resolve diversity issues at a really shallow level. We had to go to the core, which was, particularly with women, confidence, nerves, speaking up, knowing how your voice sounds, being comfortable with that, putting yourself out there. And so we created Good Shout to help people shout in their industry in a really good way and add value. And our focus is women.
And there's also a really interesting piece which we really learned and we saw in action in DICE in terms of women not always feeling in control of their careers because they're not in control of their time. And you see often, you'll see men pushing, putting themselves forward to speak at events, to upskill themselves. And actually there's this real gap where women don't always get that time or claim that time. And especially in the wake of the pandemic, which just robbed us all of so much, but so disproportionately impacted women by every measure. That element of just going, this thing I'm scared of, I'm going to actually invest some time in really breaking through that fear, because sometimes the fear is so unfounded, or you'll have incredible, amazingly talented women that are literally carrying the baggage of some really shitty feedback they got 10 years ago, which when you kind of drill down into it, they were put in a position where they were never going to succeed in that pitch or that presentation or that event because they didn't have the time, they didn't have the energy, they weren't being set up to succeed. And I think with Good Shout, we really want to set people up to succeed, you know, and actually say, it's okay to say, actually, I really need to prioritize myself and I need to get some training on these things. And also just not see yourself as fixed. You know, I think it's really interesting. And it's something that I'm always learning from Amy, because you're not always fixed. And this whole idea of we're all experiments, in which, you know, hand on heart, I was like, oh, I don't think I'm an experiment, actually. You know, I'm a very, you know, controlled woman with really clear plans. I'm not an experiment. But actually, the freedom that comes with that, because if we don't see ourselves as experiments, we see ourselves really fixed in certain positions. And I hear people saying things like they are fixed things, like I am a bad writer or I am a good writer. Like that's a fixed thing that's going to happen to you every day. And it's like, no. We're all good and bad depending on how we're doing. You know, it's not like this fixed thing. It's something that we can really be in the driving seat of.
And just one thing to add to that, Good Shout is a social learning practice that helps you experiment with your voice, your talent, your thinking. I much prefer to think of ourselves as experiments rather than that really tired old trope about embracing failure. Everyone's always talking about embracing failure, celebrate your failures. That's not realistic. And actually, being able to fail is a privilege that some people are afforded way more than others. So I think it's time to move on from that really cheesy embrace your failures type narrative.
And that whole celebrate your failures, that is a generic statement, right? It's like bring your whole self to work, generic statement. These are generic statements that aren't helping any of us.
Because they're big, they're so huge. It's, yeah, meaningless. It's become meaningless.
I think what's really interesting is one thing that was a lesson for me as I went along is like perfectionism, like strangles creativity. That was a really, really big one. It wasn't about failing. It was about trying constantly to be this ideal that wasn't anything, to your point, to be able to experiment with. I was just like focusing on like, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to be, which wasn't right for me anyway.
Perfection is like such a joyless task, isn't it? And it's a fixed thing as well. Being perfect is a fixed thing. I'm constantly amazed by incredible women around me who have an internal narrative that they're falling short. It literally is something that really crushes me to see and to hear. And it's because the ideals around, you know, are just absolutely ridiculous. And then you've got that combined with, you know, the LinkedIn reply guys that are getting like loads of kudos because they're saying, oh, I went for a non-exec role and I didn't get it. Oh, you're so honest. Thanks for sharing. Meanwhile, you know, women are absolutely smashing it and getting not the credit they deserve for it.
why I love Good Shout so much is, and it's kind of part of the reason why I started the podcast as well, is, but what rewind like 6-7 years ago, I was unable to pitch or present. And as a creative director, that was really problematic. I would literally go red. I'd literally pretty much suffocate myself. I just couldn't get the words out till I was gasping for air. And so I applied to Wackles Future. I got the grant and went off and did a kind of public speaking course. And it was a game changer for me, like an absolute game changer. And that's why I was so interested in the services you were offering and what you'd kind of experienced, because it was like what I experienced, but also obviously other people I talk to. And I think it's just so perfect to have something that people can just relax into and be themselves and find their voice in that way.
My kind of professional history is I've mostly worked at really big agencies. And so I've worked on a lot of massive pitches, and I've had presentation training in the past. I mean, we do a lot more than that, but I've had presentation training in the past, and it's always been taught by a white man in his 60s that normally used to work at the BBC. It's very do as I do, say as I say, just mimic me. And that's the, you know, hold your hand like this, walk 3 steps that way, pause for 2 seconds. It's really, really formulaic and promotes a certain type of behavior, an individual that is probably only 5% of people in any industry, really. That's having gone through that process so many times, being on the receiving end of presentation training. Like Nikki said at the beginning, actually, normally, because my accent isn't posh and I am really gesticular and sometimes I swear, feeling really shit at the end of it because I felt like an outsider. I felt like I wasn't the type that was going to succeed. We were just so determined to create something that psychologically helps people be more comfortable being themselves and not apologizing for their accent, not apologizing for the way they stand, not apologizing for an interesting, quirky turn of phrase. Like all of that stuff is absolutely essential if we want, particularly the advertising industry or the creative industries, to stay creative.
It's so true. And it's so interesting as well, because I look at that kind of formulaic experience and I've had a similar trajectory in terms of some of the feedback that I've had from some of those presentation training. You know, I'm too conversational. It's like there's this one style and it's so interesting and it's shifting. It's like debating the whole subject of always debating against somebody. It's like, well, you can also debate with somebody. You know, I think if the last few years have taught us anything, it's that this unempathetic, really, really one style of leadership, like this is what good looks like, is just not connecting with people, let alone allowing people to really thrive in the workplace. And I think it's just really, really ripe for something else. It's so emotionally complex as well for people, because we've all come into this industry through different pathways and we've all had to do or chosen to do different things. You know, when I was younger, my dad put me in allocution lessons because he'd had so much challenges in his own life because of his accent. We've got to move on from that. We've got to create an ecosystem in which we're not learning to speak in one particular way because we think actually the way we normally speak holds us back. It's got to be better than that. We can definitely do better.
I've always been told, I don't know about you two, but I've always been told throughout the years, pushing 2 decades now, I've been in the advertising industry, I was always told that I lacked gravitas. Always, repeatedly, that was the one piece of feedback that I was told was my flaw. And that, again, like Nikki said at the beginning, one piece of unsolicited feedback can totally ruin your self-esteem and how you view your potential. And it took me ages to realize that gravitas is a completely fucking fictional, terrible concept that's largely based on dishonest politicians that went to Eton, you know, someone that can walk into a room and own the room because they believe they do own the room. We talk about that a lot in our training. These really archaic concepts like gravitas do not apply anymore.
And you can see it as well. You know, you go to events, you go to conferences, you read columns and you just think, is this all there is? Is it just a bunch of the same guys deciding what is shit that week and what is good that week? And it's just not working anymore. And you see the next generation, they're just not turning up for that, you know? And it's so liberating. But also, you know, it can be quite scary to actually really carefully consider what else can we do and what can we do better? Because even now, you know, I have young, brilliant colleagues going to events, industry events, and coming back. And, you know, they've watched a panel of men discussing working class people as they do this, they do that. And I think we just need to be really honest that when people are asking that question, is this industry for me? In many ways, we're still saying no, 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 no. And that's before you even start considering race. And I think all these things that we've said and we've accepted, like embrace your failure, the privilege of that, you know, bring your whole self to work, the privilege of that. We just need to deconstruct it in a more powerful and practical way.
Which I think is a lovely segue into my next question, which is, you've also got good creative and good weird. And I often feel like the weirdo in the room. So when I read that as a kind of service that you offer, I was just like, yes, this is brilliant. So I'd love it if you could tell me a bit more about that, because I think that notion of being on the outside of these very generic statements, or who's in control of who they talk about they, or who gets employed in a company, these two elements seem to counter that in lots of ways.
So Good Weird is a bit of a pet project of mine. I've been obsessed with weirdness for the last couple of years. Like yourself, I've always had an outsider energy. Neurologically, I don't know what the issue is. I've always been a bit different. And it took me, people have called me mad, weird, peculiar, strange, all those offensive adjectives. Actually, I don't think they were intended to be nice, over the years. And actually, I've always been head of innovation or the head of creative agencies, but primarily media agencies, which means that I could get away with being a bit jazz hands and being a bit different. But I don't think everyday people are often, you know, afforded that luxury to be the quirky one dancing in the corner running a workshop. So I've been doing research into weirdness a great deal over the years. And actually, there's a lot of Harvard psychologists that have studied it. And if you're weird, you are 7 times more likely to be creative, or creative people are 7 times more likely to be weird, or maybe both. But there's a real link between weirdness and creativity, because weird people have something called low latent inhibitions, which means that you draw associations between anything and everything, and you have no filter on your eyes and your brain. So actually, if we could encourage more people in creative industries to allow their weird to come out, because everybody's weird, we just push it down because we want to survive socially. If we can allow people to find their true weird and embrace it and use it and tolerate other people's weirds, then I think we'll be more creative. And I have a presentation that I do at conferences called Weird Seance, which is about that. And so I've been wanging on about it for ages, and we've done the course a few times, and it makes people feel very uncomfortable, but that's fine. Of course it will, it's weird, but it really does make people think differently. So Good Weird, it's not going to be our top selling product. I mean, it's for creative teams. It's for people who want to be a bit different. And then Good Creative, interestingly, is the opposite. Sometimes people in creative environments who work in account management or finance or legal or procurement can get in the way because they don't consider themselves to be creative. So they play this really annoying role of devil's advocate. Oh, that isn't going to work. Oh, I haven't seen that done before. Clients can be terrible for that as well. And so Good Creative is actually for non-creative people to make them realize that they are creative, whether it's at problem solving or, you know, the more logical end of creativity.
Yeah, and everyone's creative, right? It's just how you apply it and where you place it. I think that whole notion of, yeah, I can't, which is so interesting when it comes to creativity, because it really shuts down opportunity and possibilities.
So Good Creative, that's probably the one that we've worked hardest on, because it is based on neuroscience, but the poppest version of neuroscience that you can find. But essentially, what we've agreed is that when you're at school, your creativity gets sucked out of you for whatever reason. You're taught not to have autonomous thought. You're just taught to remember facts and regurgitate them. So essentially, various different parts of your brain just shut down because they're not useful for you at school and then in your early career. So our Good Creative course is about waking up those different parts of your brain.
But also, I think it's that fact that we've got to be really honest that post COVID, and actually prior to COVID, there's a lot of friction in the workplace. And actually, a lot of that friction comes from not understanding what we're each other are doing, of attributing strengths and weaknesses incorrectly. And I think it's really easy for departments to kind of see creativity as this big, amorphous mass of hassle that's getting in the way of what they're doing. And actually, there's such a a need at the moment. And everyone's talking about, you know, the kind of importance of how many days you're in the office. But actually, none of that really matters if you're not actually giving your teams the time and space to think about what they're doing and to really thrive and to really relearn the art of communication, to reconsider some of the friction points in our day-to-day lives, which actually we don't need them all. Some friction is good, yes, but some of it is a complete waste of time.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I love creative tension. I think that really helps with ideas. But yeah, it tips over when, you know, you're not working as a team, as a wider collective. But I'm just wondering if I can ask you again, like, who else is involved? Because I know you've got other people involved, and it'd be really great to talk about that.
Good Shout is a team already. We've only been officially launched for 3 months, but already it's snowballing and becoming the beast that we were hoping it would be. But we're really, really, I'll say picky about who's involved, because you have to live and breathe all the stuff that we say. We can't preach to people about being yourself and embracing your flaws and loving your star, regardless of how it looks and sounds. And, you know, unless we have a team of people that also live and breathe that. So our team is just so unique and exceptional. We have Emma Jackson, who is an innovation coach, and she's our head of chemistry. And she is just ridiculously interesting and dynamic and so strong. Like, she enters a room and you just stop and stare at her because she's just so powerful. And she's a neurodiversity champion as well. She has ADHD, but she's also a producer, and she's been loads of TV ads, and you can't find anyone more interesting than Emma. We have Jackie Adedeji, who's an influencer. She's an Instagram influencer. She's a podcaster. She's a TV presenter. Her original podcast name was Jackie Big Tip, because she has really big tips. And she talks about body positivity and how it's really, really important to love yourself however you look. And then we have Sophie Ewan, who's been in the media and creative industry for 20 years and is just the most likable, kind, lovely, supportive person that is absolutely essential for her to always be in the room. She has such a lovely energy. And then there's us.
Like, we're such a different team, and we've got such different strengths and approaches and understanding. It's such a mix, and in such a good way. And I'll be totally honest, I've learned so much from watching these women. I think sometimes you're a bit scared of saying that, like, I should be perfect by now. You know, I can't tell people about building their confidence and their personal brand if I'm still kind of looking at and learning. But they're just, the warmth that they bring and the impact that they have is just really, it's really special.
There's kind of a relentless realness to how we each are, which means that no one ever gets paranoid or tries to second guess what people are saying. We're big fans of honesty, not only with each other, but in our training courses as well. We are brutally honest with the people that we train, but people trust us, and they trust that we're doing this because we want them to get better, not because we're on an ego trip. And I think that's really important. And this is something that I learned very quickly. I've been trained hundreds of people over the last 2 years in various different ways. And what I've learn, and I say this to the others all the time, is that you have to realize that it's not about you. Doing this job is not about you in any way. So there's no room for ego, there's no room for arrogance, there's no room for self-importance. We are here to serve the people that we train. And I think that's another thing. That's another way that we're the antithesis of traditional training companies, is we're not in it to boss people around or sound smart in a room full of people. We just want to help people get better.
You know, like, this podcast I started because I really felt there was lots of barriers to entry within the industry, especially if you fall out of that kind of male privilege bubble. And so I'm going to split off a bit and just talk about both your careers, just to give a little insight, being able to break down roles and also how people got to where they are. Because there's always this, I feel, especially within social world, like, oh, I started here and suddenly I'm here. And there isn't all the messy stuff in between of, like, going for that and things that you've come across. So Amy, I'm going to come to you first. I know you've done loads, but maybe an overview of what you were aiming for when you're leaving school and kind of what you went through to up until now.
Well, I've always been a show off. So I had a very working class background, and it bugs me a bit when people use their working classness as a badge. Look at how far I've come. But it is worth noting for anyone that's had a background that wasn't drenched in privilege. I think it's worth noting. I went to an all-girls school that was extremely kind of orthodox, Catholic, super strict, very traditional. And that is sociologically a lot to unpack. That's a very interesting dynamic and ecosystem to study. There's a lot of shit going on in that kind of environment. And from that, I have just become obsessed with people and norms and formulas and how we think we're supposed to behave and the fiction of society's rituals, because I was kind of in this really weird, strange, alien, what felt to me as an alien situation. So I've always become obsessed with people and I've always studied them. Sociology has been the thing that academically I've always been really obsessed with, studied it at uni. So I have essentially combined my obsession with people, I've never stopped studying sociology and psychology, and my burning desire to show off. I've always combined them and it's worked pretty well. So I've always been, you know, like I said, I worked in PR to begin with. I was head of futures for a while. I've always created new jobs in the agencies that I worked at. Head of futures, head of innovation, global head of creativity for publicist, as long as I was doing those two things. But that said, I have had a career littered with friction and tension and conflict because I piss off men. Not all men. Oh, hashtag not all men. I don't piss off. I've never used that way before. I don't piss off all men. Some men like me, but I do piss off a certain type of man. I trigger them. I really do. And I don't know whether it's because I seem cocky or what it is, or I'm not a massive fan of rules, but I have had to deal with a lot of very nasty, very insecure men over my career, which hasn't made it easy. Particularly when I worked in Asia, I was head of strategy for Mindshare across Asia Pacific for a few years. And that was the worst time of my life because all I had was, I was the only woman in the strategy team, but I was surrounded by expat men from England, Australia, America, who were just so fragile and insecure, they made my life hell. So now it's amazing to work for myself. Christ, no one's making my life hell.
And it's amazing all those observations and experiences, as shit as they can be at the time, you've channeled them, and the same goes for Nikki, you've channeled them into advocacy, supporting others, and realizing actually there's something that can be done from those experiences.
Absolutely. This is why I really care about other women and women that are more junior than me, or like coming through the ranks. I really, really care because I actually don't want other women in the ad industry or communications industry or creative industry to go through what I did, because it was demoralizing, humiliating. I've had two bouts of emotional stress, like it was hard, and I don't want other people to go through that. And we both do, me and Nikki both really, really, really care about other women and enabling them to thrive as they become more senior.
And Nikki, I didn't know until I was doing a bit of research, and I've known you for a few years now, I didn't realize that you started off in financial journalism.
What was I thinking? I think it was like someone told me that I wasn't good at business, but I feel like I've been really, really lucky in my career journey. I went to a scrappy state school, but I had a great education and I made lifelong friends and they've been core to everything. But I mean, I remember going to university. I went to Bristol University to do a history degree. So I am a storyteller. I love stories. I love history. Writing is my safe space. I love it. But it doesn't come easy to me. I'm not a naturally gifted writer. And I remember when I went to Bristol, the woman who was organising our halls was like, oh, we're going to move someone next door to you who's not getting on very well in this halls, because they're the only other person in this hall that went to state school. And I was like, oh, okay. It hadn't registered with me until that moment. I just thought, oh, okay, that's really strange. But actually we did get on really well, because I remember at the time thinking, God, like, is that the only thing we've got in common? Like, have you actually looked and gone, this girl's having a really tough time? And I found other people that have the same interests as her. It's like, no, we both went to similar schools. And that was the first time where I just thought, okay, actually, this isn't the norm. Like, what I'm doing isn't necessarily the norm for my educational background, but I really loved Bristol. I went on to do a master's degree in multimedia journalism. I'm super old, so it was the first time they did an MA online. The course was accredited halfway through because the BMJ were like, oh, I'm not, should we accredit online? Is that a thing? But I loved it. I made some incredible friends. And from there, I went into financial journalism in pure honesty because I couldn't afford to do the unpaid internships. So I went into financial journalism because they were going to pay me to be a journalist. But doing that was really interesting. And you would think that I would say, oh, financial journalism, that was so much harder than media and advertising. But it wasn't, because the sexism was on the surface and the women were fierce in terms of how much they would advocate for you, how much they would help you, how much they would say, there's another woman there, you know. It's definitely been interesting, like moving into media and advertising. I covered Central and Eastern Europe for a while for EMAP, and that was great. Loads of travel, very different markets, very open-minded markets. Definitely for me, I think the big sort of sucker punch was having children in a workforce that is not built for people who have caring responsibilities. And I think that was a really difficult, challenging period in terms of coming back to work after maternity leave. But I really had some shitty experiences with that. But I also had some really, really fierce female advocates for me who created space for me in structures that weren't designed to create space for me. So that's something that's really, really important to me. And also, I know it's cheesy and it's one of those things that I think is just can't be said enough. But I remember when I was really struggling and I interviewed this brilliant woman called Sue Higgs, who's now executive creative director at Dentsu. And she was just, it was the amount of time she gave me. I didn't know this woman from anyone. And I was writing a feature and she just obviously picked up on the fact that I was finding the return to work a bit of a struggle. And she just really talked to me about the importance of really, you know, your career is a marathon. Sometimes you're going to have to walk a bit, you know, and actually sometimes it's okay to go a bit fast, go a bit slow. It sounds like a generic statement, that run your own race thing. But I just think it can't be said enough. And it's like, you know, to Amy's experience, you know, there's going to be some people often in the workplace that you're going to be kryptonite to, right? And actually, sometimes you need to get out of that situation as soon as possible. And actually, that might mean taking a sidestep or doing something else. But actually, if you put yourself first, rather than your job title on LinkedIn, you're going to be able to stick it out a lot longer and actually get the space and the energy to do the things that really matter to you.
What's really interesting, I don't know who said it in this conversation, but it's lovely that Nikki and I have both had quite challenging experiences in various different ways, because we can channel that into the training that we give. And our kind of flagship product, Good Shout, the original training course that we do, is about creating spokespeople. We call it a couch to 5K for your voice. You know, you work out your tone of voice, you practice paneling, presenting, podcasting, all that jazz. But what we've realized is that different groups of people, or people with different backgrounds, or in different stages of their life, have very specific challenges related to their voice. So for example, I'm very keen to do a Good Shout training course just for working class people in our industry, which we're actually going to do hopefully this year, because you have those unique challenges. I hate my voice. I'm a little bit too informal, blah, blah, blah. I lack gravitas, etc. But also, and Nikki will likely lead this, a Good Shout for maternity, women coming back from maternity.
And you think about all the headlines that we've read about the great resignation or quiet quitting. And I speak to women in the industry and quiet quitting, it's not happening. Women are not being heard. There's definitely pinch points, whether it's, you know, maternity leave or the menopause or different life stages that we need to really recognize a bit more. But also I feel the coronavirus crisis has really created a bit of a crisis of confidence in lots of parts of the workplace. And I feel people's emotions are a lot closer to the surface at the moment. And we need to sort of tread gently with people, but also give them the space, actually, because sometimes I think companies are looking in all the wrong places for innovation. They need to be innovating within their staff first.
For sure. And I think there's so much creativity and talent. And like you said, I think things are on the surface. I'd agree with that. Just, you know, thinking about my team, you know, I also teach, and you can feel that energy. And just being able to hold people or give space or focus. I love that you've got courses that are going to now target people, because that just really opens up the opportunity to, one, know you're walking in and you'd feel relaxed immediately. Not that these are my people, but you know that it's an opportunity where you can actually be yourself.
Yeah, I think there's something really powerful. I don't want to go into one thing that we always avoid, Nikki and I, is life coach territory. Please do stop me if I start getting too profound and meaningful and Instagrammy. But I think there's something really powerful about having a trainer say to you, I know that your challenges are different. I get you. I get your situation. I get where you've come from. And I know why you feel this way. I know why you get nervous. I know why you're not as confident as Steve from Surrey. I think there's something really powerful in acknowledging that and not pretending that we're all the same, because we're not. Again, that's the thing that Good Shout, I'm really chuffed that Good Shout is really good at doing that.
And there can be such a power in that as well, because I think definitely one of the biggest learnings for me coming out of this past couple of years is I'm just absolutely floored by what women can achieve under impossible circumstances, juggling multiple plates. And I think there's so many women in organizations at the moment that are just squashed and squeezed, you know, and they need to have some space to really thrive. And that is our job. Like, we are the transition generation in the workplace, and we have to make it better for the next generation. Like, this is a once in a generation opportunity to reshape the workforce, and we are so extravagant with it. You know, we're letting Sir Alan Sugar dominate the headlines, banging on with absolutely zero qualifications apart from owning loads of office space. Like, these are not the people that need to be leading this conversation. We really need to be a lot more mindful about it. And it does worry me. And it goes back to that point that Amy was making, you know, those experiences that you have as that transition generation that are not great, and that we need to make sure that that is something that used to happen, not something that is still going on. Like, we really need to create a better, more healthy ecosystem. And not, it's not just for women, it's for everybody, right? I think we need to be giving people the best possible chance to really thrive.
You know what's interesting? One thing that I've noticed is that a lot of people come to me, and I don't know whether, Nikki, you might have been copied into some of these emails. People come to me and say, I feel like giving my staff a treat. Can we do one of your training courses? And I'm like, fucking hell, like, we're a treat. How amazing is that? And we still do. Like, the shortest course we do is a day. So
it's like chocolate orange, but yeah, it's a training option.
Oh my god, it's coming back to the Christmas jingle. It's coming back to the, yeah, it's all leading to the Christmas jingle.
Sorry, I would like to actually, I'm going to engage in some conflict. I hate chocolate orange.
No, no.
To see, no, as the Ferrero Rocher.
No. sorry,
you don't like Ferrero Rocher either.
I love Ferrero Rocher.
Oh no, me too.
Ferrero Rocher, yeah, yeah, of training.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Chocolate orange, because it counts towards your 5 a day as well.
It's sickening. It's saccharine. Oh, it's too much.
It's just for me to hear this.
Look, I'm going to ask you now, and I think it's really connected to what you're saying about also giving people time and space. And it's slightly tangential, but I'd love to hear from both of you, like, what's the most important skills that you've learned that's helped you grow your creativity and your careers, and allowed you to be able to focus on advocacy and thinking about change as well?
I think it is that thing of really taking a step back, because, you know, Amy was talking right at the beginning about, you know, this whole idea of embrace your failures. It's like, I definitely was guilty of dragging some of my failures around with me. You know, oh, I've gone to a new company, but here's all my baggage of things that didn't go the way I wanted to. And I think actually being quite harsh with myself in terms of, what is it that I'm prioritizing? Who am I actually listening to? Like, whose opinion matters to me? That can be so groundbreaking. Because sometimes I think, you know, we can be in an organization and we are wasting our time trying to persuade somebody that flexible working is a great idea or advocate for, you know, greater diversity and content. And that learning who is never going to listen to you is actually such a key skill. And just going, this person isn't going to listen to me, and this person's opinion might not be the opinion that I really need to go with. But the other thing I would say on that is I always start when I get any kind of negative feedback by asking the question, do they have a point? And sometimes they do, you know, sometimes they really do, but that do they have a point is really key. But I've got to be honest, the most important thing, in my opinion, and this is going to sound life coachy territory, in building a really satisfying career is who are you working with? Like, whose energy are you around? You know, are you surrounded by radiators or drains? And actually, I think in the wake of the pandemic, where, you know, our emotions are close to the surface, it's like you just have to be much more mindful about who you're working with. You can have an amazing job at an incredible company, but if you are surrounded by drains, you are not going to be happy. And I think really for me, being honest with myself about what I'm ambitious about, you know, I'm ambitious about doing the school run twice a week, you know, that is important to me as well. And just being really honest about not just like your career goals, but the compromises that you're prepared to make to get the life that you want and prioritize the things that you want is really key.
We actually have a course called Good Chemistry. That one's grounded in a lot of theory because it's about my spinning instructor said something really cheesy the other day, but I did love it. You know, like when you go to these special spin classes and they scream at you to love yourself and, you know, like the really motivational ones. And my spinning instructor screamed at us, there's a really unique cocktail of human energy in this room right now. You may never get this again. Don't waste it. And as cheesy as that is, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't tear up a little bit. But as cheesy as that is, it's actually really true. You need to understand the cocktail of the energy and the personalities in every single room and actually what you can, how you can get the best out of every single individual. So that's why we have Good Chemistry, which touches on feedback, which Nikki's really obsessed with. Good feedback, good conflict, good collaboration, and also charisma. Like, how can you flatter people and get the best out of them that way? And so I think like learning how to have chemistry with people, even if they're not your favorite people, is really, really important. But then conversely, like one of the things that I've learned over the years is how to really enjoy working by myself. You don't always have to collaborate. There was like an audit done of 65 million disruptions in science and innovation, and the most disruptive teams were either one person or two people. And sometimes you will come up with the best, most ridiculous, brilliant ideas solo, and that can be quite lonely. But if you can get used to that mode of really imaginative solo working, it can be super powerful. My best ideas have come from just me working by myself. Other people hold me back.
I think there's something really powerful about that. And it's really being lost in the conversation that we're having at the moment about where people work. Like, we're so obsessed with that. And actually, you know, particularly for people with caring responsibilities in the wake of the pandemic, the absolute utter joy of giving one thing your full attention in silence. I do think we really underestimate the power of like solo work, you know, that heads down solo work. And we're not setting up organizations to facilitate that. You know, there's been like a 252% increase in the amount of time people spend on Microsoft Teams since February 2020. I'll often go and speak to people. And if I ask people, has anyone had a day recently where they haven't had time to go to the loo? The majority of people in agencies will put their hands up. And we've got to be thinking more critically about what kinds of behavior we're normalizing, because actually lots of us, you know, myself included, really thrive on that alone time, heads down, real focus work. And we're not creating structures to facilitate that, which in turn creates huge amounts of friction in the workplace.
I think leaders, creative leaders, need to get better at giving their staff like thinking time. So these days, it's part of my job. I will lie on the sofa for 30 minutes to think. And I never would have done that when I was a 20-something working in an agency, because I would have felt guilty. But now I have lying and thinking time, and it's great. But also allowing people, particularly in agencies, letting people have some headspace is really underrated. For example, I've started, for the last 6 months, I've been getting into Lego, and these really complicated sets. At the moment, I'm building a Nintendo 64. Yes. There is nothing better for my brain and my mental health and my capacity to think than doing Lego.
I just think it's something that people are really, really underestimating, because I speak to women in our industry every day who are completely overwhelmed. Amy mentioned I'm obsessed with feedback. And the other thing that I'm really interested in is coaching as part of that feedback, but not generic coaching like sports coaching. In full transparency, I had a stage in the pandemic where, you know, I've got young children, homeschooling, lots of work on, where I felt like I couldn't take in another piece of information, if that makes sense. And I see that often in workplaces, that point where people are at capacity, and actually thinking about what can you just pour out of that capacity? Like what is it that you're doing? Like what can you say no to in order to say yes to some of the things that matters? And that side of things is really important and so crucial, because one of the things that I think is so clear is that we are not setting women up to succeed. We're not. So we've got to think really holistically about what we're going to do better, also on a personal level. You know, sometimes you get to the beginning of the day and you're like, do I actually actively hate myself? Because why is this my diary? You know, and I think we need to actually be quite honest about some of those pressures. And it's something that I think is really important for everyone, really. But I do worry that we've normalized, in the wake of a pandemic, a barbaric level of multitasking. So that, you know, when Amy's talking about thinking time, that is delicious, absolutely delicious. And we definitely need to prioritize that.
What I do with my team is that I'm putting you in the bubble. So if they've got a brief or something like that and they need thinking time, because I need thinking time. And unfortunately, my day is normally back to back with meetings. And then I work in the evening where I can not have emails pinging in, people calling me, Slack channel notifications, and I do great work then, but it's on top of a full day's work. So what I've been trying to do with my creative producers is, like, you've got bubble time. So you've got a couple of hours for this brief, and then I, on Slack, don't anyone contact this person, they're in the bubble. That tends to work. I mean, it's rare, it's hard to get, obviously, like you're saying, everyone's diary is like really full, but I feel like the bubble works. You need that little creative bubble where you go in and you've got a few hours to work on the brief and come back and let me know where you're at.
Oh, I was just going to say, on the subject of Slack, I would love to see some research into the negative psychological impact that Slack has, in the sense that it puts everybody on edge all of the time.
It's like a woodpecker on your head. And it's something, you know, I've been really obsessed with feedback and doing lots of research around feedback for Good Shout and creative feedback via Slack. There's some problems with that. Creative feedback via voice notes, again, problems with that. And I think we've got this opportunity now to go, right, we're going to change the way we work. Is this technology, is it actually helping us, or is it hindering us? And actually to take back that control into the element of just turning your notifications off for a sustained period of time, I think, and kind of re-energizing a bit is really important.
There's something really interesting. I'm digressing though, so I'll only talk about it for a second. But there's something really interesting about the manic use of work-based messaging apps, because I think it all comes from the fact that you want to contact people 12 hours a day, comes from insecurity and fear at work. Constantly needing approval, validation, second opinions is something, I think it's a sign of workplace toxicity. You shouldn't have to talk to people all the time, every second of the day.
I feel like we should just end brutally there. End. I don't want to keep you much longer because I know I've already gone over an hour, but I wonder if I could wrap up this one together. So how do you both look after your own well-being, which is quite relevant with everything we've been talking about, but also fuel your creativity? And also, what do you love about what you're doing?
I Lego, but also I genuinely, and I say this with sincerity, although it never really sounds like anything I say is sincere, but I say this with total sincerity. Mentally, I would not survive if I didn't exercise once a day. I go spinning, and I go to a place called Cycle, which is spelled P-S-Y-C-L-E, because that's where you go there and it feels like you're in a club and the instructors scream affirmations at you. And it's you cannot think about anything else for that 45 minutes. And even when I've gone through tough times in the last couple of years, like when my mum was sick and stuff, I've had to go there. Otherwise, and I don't say this phrase lightly, I would go mad. Genuinely. And that's like, I need that, otherwise I cannot function.
I think it's so important. It is one of those things where when you talk about exercising, it sounds like a generic statement, right? I think it is so vital. You know, I also do spinning classes, not as cool as those classes. I think in a previous life I was probably a snail or a slug, so I have to have a partner with me. I've got my friend Sally, and she just shouts at me, like she properly yells at me, so I can't be anywhere else mentally apart from where I am. And that for me is really important. But the other thing for me is silliness. Like, I've got young children, so I practice a high level of silliness. You know, there's a lot of stupidity going on in our house. We don't take ourselves too seriously. There's a lot of sport. You know, I never really played that much sport when I was younger, but my kids play a lot of sports, so I'm really heavily involved in that as well. And that really helps me focus on what matters to me. But I do think that exercise point is so important, because I'll be totally honest, since spending more time in the office, that's really dropped off the radar for me. And it has such a negative impact if I'm not exercising. It really does. And I just feel it is that point of time, like, what are you prioritizing and making the time for?
Something I ask everyone for wrapping up the podcast is, it'd be great if you, and I know you both have like extensive experience and knowledge of the creative industries, but what I'm always curious of, is there a job or a role that you kind of know little about and that I could find someone in that role and get them on and talk about that, so provide a bit more information? And also someone who identifies as female or non-binary that you could recommend for the podcast, and I can reach out to them and get them on.
So I really think it's really interesting, the work that the Diversity Standards Collective is doing, because I'm really fascinated by kind of how advertising can better reflect culture. And one of my former colleagues, a lady called Sian Blackman, she's an account director at the Diversity Standards Collective, and she's really gone in and started from scratch. And some of the work that they've been doing with a really diverse range of brands to really actually bring in communities, and the way that she does it and the workshops, I just think it's such a positive addition to the creative process. And I think she's a really, really interesting woman who I think is one to watch as well. I think she's incredible. Her name's Sian Blackman.
Amazing. I'm definitely gonna reach out to her. Thanks, Nikki.
There's a woman that actually I work with. She created the Good Shout logo, which I love because it's so chaotic and bright and dynamic and unlike anything else that's out there. And she's a street artist and a creative. I'm in awe of genuine artists because I can't draw. I'm not creative in that way. And I've been following her work for the last 3 years. She's a street artist that's managed to make the leap into the commercial space without losing any of her integrity. And her name's Harkiran Kausi, or Harki. And she has this amazing kind of, to call it cute would do it a disservice, but this amazing like 90s vibe. And she works for loads of brands now. She works for, I think, Lululemon. She works for New Balance. And she says that she's manifested her entire career. And who am I to disagree? But she's really kind of into the power of positive thinking. And the work that she produces is so beautiful and colourful. But also a lot of the work that she does has a really powerful social message. I would love you to speak to her because she has so much to say and it's all really good and she's brilliant.
Oh, they both sound awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely reach out to you for those email addresses so I can get in touch. And on the other point, any roles that you've ever come across and thought, what the hell does that do?
All the time, because job descriptions just get more and more confusing, don't they?
HR. I've always wondered what HR people do in creative agencies, because you must have a really hard job working in HR in a, particularly in a London-based creative agency, I would imagine. I'd love to hear all the juicy goss
I mean, that is actually, that would be an amazing podcast, wouldn't it? Like an anonymous podcast of like HR departments within the creative and cultural industries.
There's a couple of women though in agency HR that are blazing a trail for changing that. I think that that's the thing that I think is always, you see these things and you're like, how is this happening? And then you keep looking and there's some phenomenal women just pushing that water up a hill. Like there really are. And I think that's the one thing. I think it's so easy to be cynical, but there are some brilliant women really in HR, in agencies, really pushing that change. It's the transition generation, always chugging.
And actually the HR people person at Hub where I work, she is Izzy, she's incredible. She's just constantly chipping away, suggesting and just moving the organization forward. So
that's amazing. I've worked at quite a few agencies and I've worked with really strong female HR heads and a lot of them got fired.
Yeah.
Not because they were bad at their jobs, but because they said stuff that their primarily male CEO didn't like. It's such a difficult job.
Yeah.
Particularly in creativity, you know, particularly in our industry, there's so many egos.
But I think that there are those brilliant leaders need to be like held up, profiled and protected.
Well, look, thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing talking to you. I feel like we could talk a lot longer. I've been trying to wrangle us to make sure we didn't like go for a few hours. Good Shout is amazing. I can't wait to learn more, see what's happening. I'm definitely going to talk to you in relation to my creative team at Hub as well. It'd be awesome to sort something out. So thanks again.
Oh, it's really lovely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please do subscribe to where you get your podcasts to make sure you're up to date with any new episode drops. And you can also follow us on Instagram, at GreaterThan11. A huge thank you to Eden Richards, who creates all Greater Than 11% artwork and edits this beautiful podcast.